James, good morning.
Good morning, Sean.
Thanks very much for joining us on the program this morning.
Pleasure.
First off, what are some of the fears that are actually feeding into this desire from Australia, the US and Japan to want to compete with China in this initiative?
Yeah, Julie Bishop, our foreign minister, has talked in the past about how she fears that Chinese infrastructure initiatives in our region, particularly in Pacific Island countries, are encroaching on Australia's traditional sphere of influence. So she's worried that China undertaking these projects will lessen the impact and the influence that Australia has typically had on our near neighbours.
So the idea is to once again regain that sphere of influence.
Right. And so we've just had this new announcement that Australia is going to team up with the US and Japan on an infrastructure program that's going to rival the Belt and Road. Look, there's nothing wrong with more competition, more funds for infrastructure. That's certainly what the region needs. The best estimates we have are that the Asia-Pacific region needs about $1.5 trillion in new infrastructure every year out to 2030. So look, if Australia and Japan and the US can bring some more money to the table, that's a good thing.
Well, indeed, looking at the positives of the Belt and Road initiative as it currently stands with China, it has brought a great deal of infrastructure to a great deal of countries that otherwise could simply not afford to create this kind of infrastructure. And, you know, China's been using this in, you might call it a propaganda-style way, certainly saying to a lot of these countries, as well as bringing you this infrastructure, China is clearly your friend. We are bringing you these things that that you can now rely on, as well as obviously we can rely on to bring more goods to our major markets. But there have been criticisms that China is also using predatory lending practices and causing countries to fall into certain debt traps. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I've got concerns about that language, Sean. I mean, I'm an economist, and this idea that you can, push debt like it's a drug onto someone is a very unusual concept. China can't just walk into a country and pop down a railway network there. You know, they've got to work with the countries themselves. If you listen to what the Pacific Island countries are saying, for example, they're saying we went to China and asked for these infrastructure projects, and China's coughed up the money. So this debt trap diplomacy idea is a bit of an odd one in my book. And look, you've also got independent organisations such as the IMF. They're analysing the outstanding debt of these countries. In the case of Vanuatu, for example, which is one country that's been mentioned a lot as being a potential victim of this Chinese debt trap diplomacy, the IMF says their debt is just fine, it's sustainable. So I think this debt trap diplomacy has probably got a lot more to do with geopolitics than hard economics.
Well, one of the other countries that have been mentioned is, of course, Sri Lanka, who earlier this year did hand a port to a Chinese company after it failed to make repayments on some of the debt it owed. It's kind of like, you know, you're playing a game in Monopoly and your friend, they can't pay off with enough Monopoly money. So you say, well, I'll take a couple of those properties off your hands. And obviously this has raised concerns that China is expanding its influence in a very physical way as well as, a financial sort of way. What do you make of that?
Yeah, look, it's certainly worth keeping an eye on, and I don't discount the idea that infrastructure can bring China some strategic benefits. But look, even in the case of Sri Lanka, there's been some very good work, academic work done on that. I'm thinking of work by Darren Lim at the Australian National University, and he actually looks at the influence that China has gained through its lending for things such as infrastructure initiatives, and he finds that there's actually not a lot of evidence. There's more evidence showing the constraints around China's influence in Sri Lanka rather than these infrastructure initiatives have brought them huge influence. We forget that once these infrastructure places are in place, they're in place in Sri Lanka. So once it's Chinese capital that's tied up to the domestic politics, for example, of Sri Lanka, these countries retain enormous agency. For example, the Sri Lankan government has said that it doesn't want Chinese naval vessels visiting Hambantota Port, which is the port you're referring to, that the Chinese company now has an equity stake in.
Now, not to put too fine a point on it, but regardless of whether you're approaching this new initiative from Australia, the US and Japan from a point of fear, or whether you are coming into it from a point of, well, this is simply a smart commercial move, it's going to take a great deal of dosh to actually compete with what the Chinese have actually been doing. And none of the three countries have actually said how much they're willing to pony up. Just how realistic do you think it's actually going to be that we will see the kind of money needed to compete with this current initiative?
Yeah, well, Sean, to be honest, I think it's not realistic at all. You mentioned that there's not much detail around it. That's absolutely correct. The only numbers we've got around it, some numbers that came out from the US, which said that it was committing $115 million to the initiative. Sean, that'll buy you 5% of the Sydney CBD light rail project, right? So, I mean, I don't mean to trivialise it, but if that's all we've got, I mean, Australia said hasn't committed anything to it, nor has Japan. So that's the stage we're at. The danger, of course, is that it doesn't get any meat put on it, and in the end, it doesn't emerge as any form of competition to China's Belt and Road Initiative at all. And as I said, I think a bit of competition is a good thing. So I hope we see some more meat around it soon.
And just perhaps as a final point, James, you know, Australia is, China is the biggest trading partner that Australia has, so it's our biggest economic partner, and yet we do still stick fairly close to the United States, and the United States as a superpower, certainly the United States in their concerns around China. What kind of message is this actually sending to China that we are willing to be part of this infrastructure project? How might it affect Australia-China relations?
Yeah, I think it's not positive, Sean, because while there's nothing wrong with putting up a bit of competition for the Belt and Road Initiative, let's not forget we can also engage with China on the Belt and Road Initiative. This is not either or. And we're more or less not doing that. Malcolm Turnbull stood up last year and said that he didn't really want to sign a general memorandum of understanding cooperation with China on the Belt and Road Initiative because he wanted to talk about specific projects and specific investments. Well, fine, but when he stood up next to Donald Trump earlier this year, he signed a broad-ranging memorandum of understanding with the US. No specifics, no projects, and that's more or less what the latest announcement we've had as well with Japan and the US around infrastructure cooperation. So we're sending some pretty horribly mixed messages. And let's not forget, as you said, it's China that buys $118 billion of Australian-produced goods and services at the moment. So it's an odd message to be sending to the biggest buyer of your products.
James, thank you very much. Really do appreciate your time on this one this morning.
Good to talk to you, Sean.